to Relationships 2.0. I'm Michelle Steen. I'm thrilled to welcome back Alan Fox with his second book. He is the author. His latest book is People Tools for Business, 50 Strategies for Building Success, Creating Wealth, and Finding Happiness. Welcome back, Alan.
Hi, Michelle. Glad to be back.
So I'm really thrilled that you joined me, because after reading your book, I realized that doing radio interviews isn't one of your favorite things to do.
Well, it was a pleasure to be on your show, and you make it very, very pleasant.
Thanks so much. Anyway, I love your book, and, you know, as with your first book, People Tools, I just really feel like you have such a talent for distilling really important information into really short bites, which seems to be the way that everyone wants to receive their information these days.
Yes, I agree. And I like to do it short. I don't have a long attention span, so I like to get the message across quickly and simply and in a very entertaining way.
You know, one of the things that I think people forget about, and I guess they're reminded of it when they have roadblocks to success, that it's really important to know yourself and how to interact with people in order to be successful.
Absolutely. And I learned something. I was at a friend's 100th birthday party recently, and someone said, how do you live to be 100? And he thought about it, and he said, stick it out. And, you know, I think in business and in life, being persistent and just keeping on trying is very, very important.
It really is. Lazy never pays off, does it?
No, absolutely not. Keep at it. I was with a gentleman for lunch just now, and he has an $18 billion company, and he said that he and his partners made 300 presentations, 300 before they got their first raise of money many years ago, but 300 times, and that was a big success. So it pays to work and to keep on trying.
And the thing about that persistence, it's how, you know, I talk to people about this in terms of rejection, whether it's personal, you know, romantic, or, you know, in the case of what you're talking about, you know, business, the more you do it and the more you reject it, the more you, it kind of fuels you, and in a way you become kind of numb to it. I think if you rarely put yourself in a situation that could ultimately result in rejection, when you feel that blow, it's all the more powerful.
Absolutely. And you have to, and you also get better at it, Michelle. You know, I mean, people do this for business. I talk about that because I do real estate, and the first time I tried, I talked to five people, and one of them was an uncle of my partner. He said, well, I'll give you two young guys a chance starting out. But that wasn't a very good response. So you keep doing it, keep knowing what your customers want, what your friends want, and you get better at it. But I agree, if you can't take rejection personally.
Yeah.
And just keep on going.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I first, let's start with the beginning of your book, I was reading the introduction. I was thinking, oh, this is cute. His son, who is, I think, at UCLA, he teaches at UCLA or whatever, wrote the introduction again. This is really nice. Then I get to the end, and it's your daughter.
Yeah, right.
Right? Amazing.
Yes.
So that was very cool.
Well, thank you. I have six amazing children, and actually, I thought of something.
So now you have to write four more books.
Well, I'm writing People Tools for Romance and Love right now, and one of my other daughters is going to write the foreword for that.
Nice. So you'll be back. See, by the time you're done with all of your books, you'll love radio show interviews. I was disappointed that my radio show interview wasn't the one that you mentioned in this book, though, when I got to that point.
Well,
it's okay. It's okay.
Maybe this one will be in the next book.
It'll make the book for the next cut. So I want to jump around a little bit, if that's okay.
Sure.
One of the things that, I had a recent experience that reminded me of ignore. And I think that we've all had plenty of experiences like this. Explain what ignore is, and then let's chat about that.
Okay. Well, ignore is, you know, ignore people who upset you. And you don't have to make it personal. And I just, I don't react. You know, sometimes I'll get an email, somebody's very upset and they attack me personally. I just ignore that part of it. I deal with the business points or with the substantive issues and don't get involved. So ignoring, an incitement to get angry, I think is a good way to be happier in your life.
Well, and also it's so easy for people to respond now. I think it was originally Abraham Lincoln who talked about how he would, you know, when he was angry, he would write the letter and then he would let it sit for, you know, X number of days, or maybe they called it a fortnight. And then he would reread it, and, of course, he wouldn't be angry anymore, and he wouldn't send the letter. And that was the advice that he dispensed. And I think it's so different now because people can really they can hit that send button so quickly on email or even text. But, you know, I had a recent experience where someone had offered to do something for me. And so I sent her an email that was about something else. And then I said, oh, by the way, you know, I'd love to take you up on that offer if you wouldn't mind doing that. And she emailed me back and said again that she was super busy. And could I remind her again? And, of course, this is me reminding her after she had already told me to remind her. And so
Yes. She
said, could you remind me in 3 weeks when I'm not so busy? And this was on the heels of me reminding her after a month because she was so busy. And so I said, you know what? Don't worry about it. You're off the hook. It's fine. I don't have, like, that puts another thing on my to-do list. Like, mm-hmm. Now I have all my stuff to do. Plus, I have to remind you. And she has an assistant, and I don't, right? So now I'm her assistant. So anyway, I said, don't worry about it. Like, no hard feelings, but I'm not going to do that, you know? Like, you're off the hook. I got the longest, nastiest email back.
Whoa.
It involved her financial problems, how busy she is, how burdened she is, that she does follow through on stuff, and how dare I let her off the hook. Like, it was insane. It was insane. And I just thought, I can't even, like, I don't even want to respond to that. That's just a whole lot of crazy. And so, like your chapter 20, I ignored.
Yeah.
I just didn't respond. I think sometimes people are – it was completely misdirected. It's just that I happened to be the person who hit her at the moment that she was ready to explode. And so rather than, you know, directing it toward maybe – I'm not sure anyone deserves that kind of stuff that came through in that email. But I knew it wasn't me, and I knew that I wasn't going to waste my time or – energy addressing everything that she had said in that email.
Oh, well, absolutely, and there's no sense doing that. But I have another chapter in People Tools for Business, which is wait 3 days. Because, you know, I once, from a former partner, I got a very, very nasty letter about some property and stuff, and I was angry. And I put it aside for 3 days, and then I called up and dealt with a business points only, and we
that was so creative too. I mean, obviously that's the reason why you're so successful in business, but even the way that even your proposal to him was so clever. So it would be great if you could tell that story, because it's so great also the way it all worked out too, but
yes, I'd be happy to, Michelle. I had a law partner, and we owned the real estate business. And after a while, he wanted to practice law, so he went off in another law partnership and took a couple of properties with him, which I still managed. And then he writes me this letter that I mismanaged his property and I've stolen refrigerators, and if I'd done it properly, it would have been worth $280,000. It's only worth $260,000. He's going to sue me for $20,000. And, you know, I thought I was doing a pretty good job for him. He's getting cash every month. But I waited 3 days. Then I called him up. I said, look, the essence of what you said is your property would be worth $20,000 more with $280,000 if I had done it properly. He says, yeah, that's right. I said, okay, tell you what, I'll buy it for the $280,000. And he said, well, Alan, why would you do that? I said, hey, come on. We were law partners for 5 years. I've seen you write these kind of letters, and then you sue. So you sue me. We'll spend $20,000 in attorney's fees. You might win. Why should we go to the hassle? Let's just solve it this way and be done with it. And he said, well, think about it. He called me back a day or two later. He said, okay, we'll do it. And we did. And the happy ending to the story for me is that 2 years later, I sold the property for a big profit. So, you know, by not getting upset or involved, just as you were saying, I'm the woman who unloaded on you. You don't have to get involved in that kind of stuff. It just makes you unhappy, and it doesn't solve any kind of problem. So either ignore, or if you're going to respond, wait 3 days, and then if you're like me, you can respond more rationally and not just out of emotion.
Yeah, well, I mean, you also really diffuse the situation because he's talking about losing money. So you're like, okay, I'll just buy everything, including what you I'll just pay you for what you think the property is worth. I mean, it was just really clever. And I think that I think most people always regret when they do that, although I think that most often they're too ashamed to then follow up with an I'm sorry. And as you've written about already, an apology is a big thing. Like, I didn't get an apology. I mean, on some level, she must still think that she's justified or she's embarrassed because she lost it. But that's the last I know of her, right? That's my last experience with her.
Yes, that's true. And that's, in a way, that's unfortunate. But actually, I just wrote a blog this morning on my website. The blog is 5 ways to say I'm sorry. Because, you know, there's a good way to say it. Many people, Michelle, as you know, just will never, ever say I'm sorry.
It makes them feel weak. And it's actually, and it's actually a strength to be able to say that.
Absolutely. And it contributes so much to a relaxation in the relationship. Because, you know, if someone does something and I get angry and I want them to say I'm sorry, and they do, then I feel better. And the other way around, I'm happy to say I'm sorry if I upset someone.
Yeah, I know. It is really interesting. Well, I think that, and you were even talking about this in your book about, you know, you growing up not, and, you know, I think a lot of it is a generational thing, as you also say, without getting a lot of praise, without really getting any praise, right? It was like you were, if things were only pointed out if you weren't performing well. It was like, hey, what's, you know, why the A minus instead of the A? What's up with this minus? As opposed to great job on getting all A's, you know, kind of thing.
Yep.
And so, people who grow up in kind of withholding environments, I think that they view certain things as weaknesses and certain things as strengths, that it's a little bit skewed. And I think that your books serve an important purpose in that, you know, they quickly but profoundly remind people of what is important and kind of how we should be behaving, which I think everyone needs to be reminded of.
Yes, I agree.
Frequently.
Yes. Well, you know, my father thought that if you praised someone that they would get a big head and just not cry anymore. But, you know, I mean, psychological research shows very clearly if you want to encourage behavior, like I have a chapter in my first book, People Tools, about children, catch them being good.
Right.
They do something you like, just praise the heck out of them, and they will do it again. They want your praise. And people do through business. I have a chapter. I do this all the time. I call it appreciation attack. And I'll just write a quick email to someone and say, you know, this is an appreciation attack. I want to tell you, I really appreciate what you did yesterday, or I appreciate you. And it works miracles.
It's really nice. I think a lot of people don't take the time to do that anymore. And I think some of it is that people, like, we don't think other people are paying attention, right? It just seems like everyone's just constantly distracted. But I know, I really notice when people are behaving well, when they're polite, when they go out of their way to be kind. And I don't take that for granted.
Yes. No, I agree. And so many times, Michelle, I'll be at lunch with three other people, and everybody's on their cell phones. They're not paying attention to each other right there in person. And when I'm with someone, I want to give them my full attention, and I want their full attention.
Yeah, the technology is, you know, this semester I started teaching developmental psychology to college students. And it is an exercise in frustration to deal with kids. It can also be very rewarding. I want to say that. But it can be an exercise in frustration dealing with kids who grew up with technology and they're constantly on their computer or their cell phones. I mean, I feel like the technology police. Don't text in class. And you don't know if they're taking notes or, well, I know when they're watching a YouTube video because they're smiling and I know there's nothing funny about my lecture. So that's when I say, Zach, you can close your computer since clearly you're not using it to take notes. But I think that your book should be kind of required reading for, I think, teenagers. Honestly, I think there are a lot of kids that are growing up without any people skills at all. It's shocking.
I unfortunately agree with you, and we need more. No one ever tells you. We teach you in school how to read and how to do arithmetic, but no one ever, until maybe you get to graduate school or college, you don't take courses on how to get along with people and what development psychology is all about. And Michelle, I think if you can have only one skill in life, getting along with other people is a skill to have.
I agree. So what is your tell me, let's talk some more about the contents of your book and what you felt was important to get across to people in terms of their business relationships and how they do business.
Well, I think really there are a number of specific techniques, and my People Tools for Business is really designed on how to get along with people in business context, but it applies to life, you know, whether it's friends or customers or coworkers. There are a number of things you've got to know. I think one that I like is applause. Give people praise. Give them praise in a meeting. I try to give people, because I run my business, but I try to give other people credit for good ideas. When I was new in business, somebody would come to me with an idea, and I would say, oh, that's terrible. I don't like that at all. And then 2 weeks later, I would announce it as my idea. And I'd forgotten who gave it to me. But people got very upset.
That's hilarious.
Oh, that's my idea. You said it was so good 2 weeks ago. So now I really want to give them credit and make them feel good about contributing. And then they'll want to do it even more.
Exactly. Yeah, people enjoy being celebrated for true accomplishments, not for made up stuff, but for actual, you know, things that they've done. One of the things that you wrote about in the book, I can't remember the name of the chapter, I think it was something about being grumpy, but was you're talking about how your mood was really changing the whole workplace because people spent so much time talking about, oh, wow, Alan's in a bad mood today. Don't talk to him about this or that. Now is not the time to ask him for a bonus. Talk about that.
Yes. Well, that's the People Tools for Business chapter, Leave Grumpy at Home. And I don't know, for some reason, my wife and I used to, not frequently, but too often, have a fight in the morning before I went to work. And I was very upset. And I walked into the office with a scowl on my face, and I went to my office and closed the door. And the problem was, aside from the fact that, you know, I didn't feel too good about myself and about what I was doing, everybody said, oh, God, what's going on with Alan today? And they would talk about what's going on with me for 4 hours instead of doing their work. And
right.
Finally I realized, you know, my mood has an effect on everybody, and I want them to do their work. So I don't care what happens at home or on my way to work. But I walk into my office, I have a smile on my face, I greet people pleasantly, and make it a part of the team effort, and we can all do a better job.
Yeah, it is. It's also, it's so interesting the way that we can burden other people with our moods. It's a pretty selfish move.
Well, that's true.
It's kind of an interesting, like, attention-getting thing, right?
Yes. Yes. Well, I find, Michelle, that moods are contagious, and I'd rather spread joy, and also, I don't like to hang out with people who are negative all the time. I mean, that just drags me down. And sometimes, of course, we all have problems, but, boy, as a regular business, I want to hang out with people who are constructive and positive.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It makes such a difference. And, okay, so Grumpy stays at home, and hopefully Grumpy isn't even at home, but, you know, people figure out how to work through all of their issues before they head to work. Talk about the not making telephone calls. You're not in the business of making telephone calls.
Well, that's one of my favorites. I came to my office. I was out of the office for a few days. I came in on Tuesday morning, and the elevator didn't work. And I was upset. I mean, you know, the elevator has to work. And what had happened was, on the previous Thursday, the elevator trapped somebody. It stopped working. We called the service company. They told us how to flip a breaker or something, and they said, they'd come out and fix it. It was Tuesday. I mean, 4 or 5 days had gone by, and it wasn't fixed. And I talked to the person who was in charge of taking care of the physical office. I said, what's going on? And she said, well, I called them on Thursday. They said they were going to come out. And, I mean, I must admit, I was not happy. I said, you're not in the business of making telephone calls. You're in the business of making things happen. And you have to follow through. And just somebody tells you they'll do something and then they don't fix the elevator, that's just not acceptable. And, you know, if you're a salesperson, I value results. And I don't care if you make one call or 1,000 calls. It's what you got in sales. So, you know, you're not in the business of making phone calls. And in your life, you're not in the business of just talking about stuff. You're in the business of making things happen. And I think that's important.
Yeah, and, I mean, don't we all get tired of that? Someone says, oh, yeah, I'm going to take care of that, or I'm taking care of that, but nothing's changing. Or even when we've done that with people. I mean, I know that never makes me feel good about myself if I have that thing on my to-do list I haven't done.
Absolutely. And also, you know, being reliable in life, I think, is important. I, you know, when I make an appointment for lunch or to see someone or to see friends, I keep it. I show up, absolutely.
You've got
to show up. Yes.
You know, first day of these college courses that I teach, I said to the students, you know, there's an attendance policy. Like, if you have more than 3 unexcused absences, you know, it's going to affect your grade, all this stuff. And I said, bottom line, just life lesson, just show up. Just show up.
Yep.
Sure, you don't feel, oh, I don't really feel great today. Do you know how many times I wake up and think, oh, do I really want to drive over there and deal with all of that? Well, yeah, I made a commitment, so I'm going to do it. I'm not going to not go. And by the time you come up with these elaborate excuses, like I have gotten these emails or like novels from the students, right, because it has to be really dramatic, like I was in my car driving to class, I started not feeling well, and then I thought, wow, I have the heat on too high in the car, and then I looked and the heat wasn't on, but I was really hot, and so then I pulled over into the Safeway parking lot, and I started getting headaches, and now I'm not going to be able to make it to class, and I just burst out laughing. Like, I read these emails to my kids who are all college students, right? Would you ever do this? Please tell me you would never do this, right? You know, lie 101 is just like, keep it simple, right? Don't go into some like elaborate detail, or it's just like ding, ding, ding. Okay, that's a lie. But I love the ones I get where they just say, you know, I'm not coming to class today. See you Wednesday. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Like it's still an unexcused absence, but at least you're not trying to say some elaborate story that will make me go, oh, okay, well, I'll make this an excused absence.
This sounds really good,
especially the part about the Safeway parking lot, you know.
There's a line in Shakespeare, which is, methinks the lady doth protest too much.
Exactly. You know, but showing up is a huge thing, and being dependable. And I think that the being dependable piece, people really forget that. I think there are a lot of people who end up getting opportunities that they wouldn't have otherwise had because they can be counted on. And in the end, we all want people who can be counted on. So it might be this person isn't the smartest person, but I know they're always going to show up because they do. And this other person might be a little bit smarter, but they're so flaky.
Absolutely, Michelle. In my business, people are reliable. One woman has worked for me for about 10 years. I think she's now 66 years old. I don't know if she's missed a day of work. The work is reliable. She doesn't make mistakes very often. And she's dedicated, enjoys what she does. And being reliable is critical, I think, in business.
And it gives everyone one less thing to worry about, right? Because they're not, it's almost like the grumpy thing you were talking about. Well, if you've taken away, okay, now we don't have to deal with Alan's moods. We don't have to deal with whoever's unreliability. It just makes life a lot easier, right? I just know these things are going to happen.
Yes, I think psychologically, we'd like to be able to rely on some things. And when I take a vacation, as I joke with my wife, the best part of any vacation is when I walk into my bedroom at home, I know where everything is, I have everything I need. And vacations are fun and adventuresome and interesting and different, but I sure like reliability. And in people, I like reliability. You do what you say. I know who you are. It's very nice.
Yeah, it really is. So another issue that people have, and you address it in your book, is delaying gratification.
Yes.
So well, we all know Michelle, about
Well, you know, I think that, people who for business, it's important in life and in business, and that is we're all kind of programmed for immediate gratification. We want what we want, and we want it now. But when you think about it, like in an area that I wasn't too successful in was delaying gratification on food. So, you know, as one comedian said, I'm on a seafood diet. I see food, I eat it.
Right.
But if you can delay and just modify that, but with money, I still remember when I was first married in my early 20s, and a friend said, "No, buy your wife a dress once in a while, Alan. You're just too cheap." I said, "Well, you know, it's not the money for the dress, but it's the 15% I can earn on that for the rest of my life. It makes it pretty
That's
expensive."
That's hilarious.
And so with money, if you save, Well, I figured out when I was 18, I got my first job, and I was earning the minimum wage of $1 an hour. And my dad was earning $1.34 an hour, 24 hours a day, from his real estate investments. And I thought, before I go to work, he has earned more money sleeping than I'm going to earn working all day. And so if I can delay the gratification, and instead of, you know, spending money now, when I was younger, and save it and invest it and let it work for you, then you'll do much, much better in the future. And delayed gratification on all kinds of things, I think, is very helpful, although you don't want to delay your gratification forever. As John Maynard Keynes said, you know, in the long run, we'll all be dead, so let's not postpone things
right.
too long.
Right. But you were really wise at such a young age.
Well, it was fun for me, Michelle. I enjoy planning and just the process, and I enjoy saving and figuring out,
yeah.
you know, what interest I'll get and all that stuff. So it's fun for me, actually.
So kind of the math thing is interesting to you, the numbers game.
Yes, and you know, by the way, in that regard, I have a chapter in People Tools for Business called Budget. You have to have a budget, and a lot of people.
Right. Yeah. Talk about the budget. Yeah.
A lot of people are afraid of numbers. They don't like numbers. My brother had a business. He would ask me for advice, and I'd say, well, let me see your financial statements. And he said, well,
David.
I don't really have them. Yeah. But, you know, like a budget is not that hard. It's really two lists. It's a list of your expected income, whether it's your salary or your sales or whatever. It's your income. Just make a list. It's simple. Then make a list of what you think your expenses will be, like a telephone and your rent and those kind of expenses.
Yeah.
And add them up. And if your income and your expenses are the same, then you're okay. If they're not, if your income is too little, try to raise it, or your expenses are too high, you've got to deal with that. So when dealing with numbers, and I know a lot of people are just phobic around numbers, like my brother was, but if you can keep it simple, have someone else do the budget for you and tell you how you're doing. But I think it's important to have a plan, and then a financial plan, and then you can see how you're doing relative to your plan.
What do you think distracts people from that? Do you think that, like, the conspicuous consumption, and there's, you know, constantly bombarded with images and other things that we can't, quote, live without, that people are just acquiring too many material possessions and focused on pleasure in the moment, which is really fleeting? We know that, you know, from plenty of studies that that whatever it is you're buying gives you like this quick surge, and then your, you know, elevation of mood, and then it's quickly crashing again.
That's true, but interestingly enough, Michelle, I was reading an article just this morning on impulse buying, and the article was saying that with the internet, people kind of shop on the internet and get prices and all that, and this article was saying actually that more people nowadays are resisting impulse shopping. And, you know, the people who want you to buy stuff are very good at it. They'll, you know, they pay to have a good placement in the grocery store and put their things at the checkout stand. But people now are getting a little bit more sophisticated about it. And this article was talking about one couple. They went to the grocery store and they just bought what was on their list. And again, that's delayed gratification, but you have your 8 or 10 or 14 things you're going to buy, and that's what you're buying. You don't buy anything extra. So I agree that there's an impulse, again, for immediate gratification, but I think it really pays to think about that and to be in control of what you spend rather than let the people who are selling you stuff be in control of it.
Did they say what they were attributing this lower numbers in terms of impulse spending to?
Yeah, I think they were, because they said on the internet you can shop for stuff and get prices, and that way people are more focused on what they're paying and getting the best price
they're bargain shopping.
Exactly. And, okay. and as you know, we're coming out of a serious recession, and, you know, people had to save money during the recession, and those habits are kind of still hanging on, which I think is a good idea.
It is a good idea. I mean, I think people are still really feel a lot of uncertainty and anxiety about the economy and what's going to happen and where we're going.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And it pays to think and plan ahead. I totally agree with that.
Now, you're really smart about business stuff. Indulge us for a second before we get back to your chapters. How do you feel about what's going on with the economy? Do you think people should be hopeful, or do you feel like we have some rough roads in front of us?
Well, I'm reasonably optimistic, Michelle, and I'll tell you why. As you know, the recession from about 2007 to 2010 or 11 was very, very serious, the worst since the Great Depression in the 1930s. And we've come out of that relatively slowly. And also, when you look at the world economy, you know, China's growth is actually slowing down, and Europe has not come out of the recession yet, because they've had different policies in the United States. So, to me, the fact that the recovery has been relatively slow means that it will last longer. So, I think that the next 2 or 3 years will be pretty good economically. But also, there's another factor which we have to remember. I just saw on television yesterday, the United States next year will probably be the largest oil producer in the world. In the United States, with fracking and natural gas and oil discoveries, we become a huge supplier of oil and gas. And that is why a friend of mine was telling me this morning in the San Jose area that, you know, gas is, I think, it's a $2.59 a gallon, and there was a line around the block. And that's down about a dollar from a year ago. And that provides, you know, that I read this morning that's going to save people $40 billion. And probably this Christmas season is going to be the best in probably 15 years for retailers, in part because of the recovery and also because of the savings in gas prices.
Yeah, the gas prices are so different. I mean, I remember, it doesn't even seem like it was that long ago, I was filling up my tank, and it was $100.
Right.
It was $100 to fill up the tank, and now it's $35.
Right. I tell you, the first time I filled up a tank and it was $100, I was horrified.
Yeah, it's awful. Well, and the whole and it stops at $100. Like, they weren't even programmed to go above $100. So if you needed more gas because you had, you know, like a big gas guzzler, you had to, like, start over again.
Yes, absolutely.
It's so crazy. So, okay, let's talk about, back to more of your brilliance in the book, Cutting Through the Fog.
Okay.
41.
Okay. Just one second. You put some good chapters.
That's okay. Talk about one you want to talk about. I would I would be so mad at me right now if someone was telling me, what's on page 5,
One fun one is don't sue the bastard. I've been in business for over 45 years, and you know, I also am an attorney, went to law school, and when I graduated law school, I was sure that, you know, you have the facts, you apply the law, and everybody looks at it and comes to the same conclusion. And that is not the case. I think in terms of litigation, for example, your odds are worse than they are in Las Vegas, because the croupier, namely the attorneys, are going to collect a huge fee, win or lose.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I know people get angry, they file lawsuits, and come back in a year or two after they've paid a lot of money out, and believe me, and more than 95% of all cases are settled. So it's to me in business, just try to stay out of litigation. It's very time-consuming and expensive.
Yeah. One of the things that reminds me of is that great story about you and your brother, David. I'm sorry for you about his passing. It seems like it was recently, like last year.
Actually, it was about 10 years ago.
I don't know why that little note said, maybe I didn't understand the note that was dated, or I thought it was dated 2013.
No, 2003, actually.
Oh, 2003. Okay. Anyway, that was really – so that's the Hidden Agenda one. Talk about the Hidden Agenda, and because that's very interesting.
Yes. Well, you know, we all have an agenda, meaning, you know, what do we want? And I'm talking about our own agendas and also the agendas of other people and people who do business. And you want to know what the other person really wants, because sometimes we're afraid to say what we really want. And, you know, one time I wanted to date a woman, and I said, you know, that's a lot with you. She said, Alan, I'm sorry, but I like guys who are 6'3", blonde, blue eyes. And, well, since I'm 5'8", I said, well, I might be able to do something about blue eyes and blonde, but I can't do anything about 6'3". So she gave me her agenda and saved us both some time and trouble. And so when you're with people, if you're trying to sell them something and they don't want it, then you're wasting their time and yours. And so, you know, it's important to cut to the chase, to get to the essence and know what it is you really want and find out what the other people really want. And then your life becomes much more effective at getting what you want and also avoiding misunderstanding.
Right. That's what one of the things that really stood out to me that I thought you highlighted so well, and that was that your brother didn't want the job that he had working with you. But rather than just saying that because he was worried about hurting your feelings, he instead, like, denied your request for him working a certain number of hours a week, at which point you fired him because he wasn't going to be putting any time in on the job. And then you later find out that he said no because he didn't want the job, when it would have just been easier. It would have been easier all the way around if he had just said.
Yeah, exactly. My brother worked for me, and he was showing up less and less. And we actually went to a therapist to work it out. And finally, I said, David, I'm paying you full time. You've got to be, and this is the days before cell phones and emails, I said, but you've got to be at your desk in the office from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, excuse me, from 10 o'clock until noon, Monday through Thursday. That's the absolute minimum I can accept. And then he said, well, I can't promise to do that. And then it was almost as if someone else was sitting there. I heard these words go out of my mouth. Well, then you're fired. And his agenda is exactly what you said. He didn't want to have the job. He didn't like it. He didn't feel he could do it too well. But he was afraid to offend me by quitting. And so his agenda was to get fired. And you've probably seen, Michelle, in relationships that sometimes one of the people wants out, but they won't say that. And they just get so unpleasant and so uncooperative that the other person says, well, in that case, we shouldn't be together. But often people don't take responsibility themselves.
Yeah. It is really interesting. I mean, now that you mentioned that your next book is about romance, I would imagine that you're going to have a lot of your little chapters are going to be about communicating and how to communicate about things effectively, because that's a huge, you know, you mentioned that in this book, that's a huge tool that, I mean, and not a good tool, that people use to get out of situations. They just are very passive and push the other person to take action rather than them taking action.
Yes, definitely. And I find that's true often in life. And my next book, People, Tools, and Love and Romance, actually, that one of the tools is going to be courtship behavior. You meet someone, you like them, and then you pretend. Oh, you like to play golf. Oh, I love golf.
Right.
My wife tells a story about a couple got married, and right after the ceremony, the woman says to the man, now I don't have to get on your darn boat anymore.
Yeah.
Well, there was a miscommunication there. She never liked it. He thought she did. I don't think that's a good way to have a relationship.
No, it's not. It's so there is a lot about this hidden self, right? Like I think, you know, I fear that someone's not going to like me if they see me for who I really am, or I feel like I have to twist myself into, you know, a pretzel shape in order for this person to like me. And I think that's why we definitely went through this period. I don't know if people talk about it as much anymore, but where it was actually said, oh, she trapped him. You know, she trapped him because she acted like she liked to do all this stuff, and then she didn't really like to do that.
Yeah,
that idea of having any kind of behavior that's designed to trap someone in something that clearly wouldn't be a healthy, happy relationship is kind of insane.
Absolutely. And you know, there's another chapter in People, Tools for Business, which is the ticker tape. And I used this. Mm-hmm. I invented it on my second date with my present wife. She said, you know, I don't date people, customers of my employer's business. And I was a customer. And I thought, oh, boy, I'm going to lose her. And I just blurted out authentically what I liked about her, why I wanted to see her. And at the end of lunch, she agreed to go out together. So I think, Michelle, being authentic in a relationship is absolutely key to having a good relationship.
Yeah, in business, in romance, in life. Alan, before we run out of time, tell everyone how they can find you, because you also have a really great website and you blog regularly. So tell everyone how they can find you.
Sure. Yeah, my website is peopletoolsbook.com, and my email is Alan, A-L-A-N, at peopletoolsbook.com. And I put out a blog every Tuesday morning, and I've done that for a year and a half. And I think people find that helpful. And then, you know, the People Tools for Business are on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and bookstores.
You are a New York Times bestselling author for good reason. I really I always appreciate talking to you, and now more, now that I know that you don't really love these conversations, but, and you know, I want to have you back with when your next book comes out. You turn these around quickly. This is impressive, especially given your creative and helpful content. I really do think that these are powerful books for people, and one of the things that I like it, I mean, I love this format. You know, I've talked to my publishing company about this format because I think for a lot of people, they want to pick up a book. And, you know, this could be on my night table. And every night before I go to sleep, I read about a couple of tools. And I go to sleep, you know, instead of, there are some books that, you know, it's great to read the entirety. And, of course, I've written those kind of books. But I just think that this is nice that there are these little really helpful pearls of wisdom that you can take one pearl at a time and you don't have to put on the whole necklace at once.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I like to keep the chapters to, you know, 2 to 5 pages. You can read it in a few minutes on the airplane, at home, before going to sleep, I agree, and you can get something out of it in just 2 or 3 minutes. Or read the whole book through, some people.
Exactly, like I did. Alan Fox, thank you so much. Continued success. People Tools for Business, 50 Strategies for Building Success, Creating Wealth, and Finding Happiness.
Thank you, Michelle. It's been a pleasure.
Take care. Be well. I'll be back. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, everyone. I'll be back next week. Be well.